Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albedo. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Good evening, Carlos. Don't know if you noticed it last weekend, but there was a little football game on Sunday. Congrats to Peyton Manning for his second Super Bowl win. The Denver defense was simply outstanding. The Waste Management Phoenix Open drew over 600,000 fans for the week and finished after the kickoff of the Super Bowl. Lydia Ko struggled in her final round and fell down the leaderboard at the Coates LPGA Championship in her first event of the year. And we have two great interviews from the PGA Merchandise Show. We've got a ton of golf to cover tonight, Carlos, so let's go.
Let's go, and I want to second those thoughts, so those congratulations to Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. Really, what a D, what a play there, what a game. I loved it. But anyway, what really caught my mind that day, my attention, was, like you mentioned, the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which finished after the kickoff, and let me tell you, I had to finish seeing it. Why? Because it was another 20-something. This time, 23-year-old Hideki Matsuyama. Yeah, one of my favorites. Yes.
One of your guys.
Yes.
One of your guys.
He did it. He won the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and it was in a dramatic fashion. I mean, I just couldn't. Just on the commercials, I was flipping. You know? Let me see how the game is going. No, let me go back. You know, it was.
Can you do this?
Floor.
Can you do that? Can you
yes.
do this? Can you do that? Yeah, it was fun.
It was on the fourth, seventh death play of hole. You know, in regulation play, he had been two shots behind with two holes left. But for Ricky Fowler, this one was the one that got away. Oh, my God. He was two shots ahead of the field when he was stood there on the 17th tee, having made par on that famous 16th stadium hole after missing a 10-foot birdie putt. But then he drove his tee shot on the 317-yard, the 17th, through the green and into the water. He made bogey, whereas playing partner Matsuyama collected a birdie, having hit his approach to within 30 feet. Fowler then came unstuck again on the 17th for the first time the pair encountered on the playoff on the fourth playoff hole. Matsuyama, he shipped to 6 feet and two-putted for the win, and Fowler missed a 10-foot putt. Wow, Danny Lee, who had also gone into the final round at three ahead of their playing partners, Matsuyama and Fowler, but he shot a 73 to drop to fourth position. For Matsuyama, who described that 18-foot putt he drained on the 72nd hole, and he said, I quote, "Probably the best putt I have ever made in my life." It had left Fowler needing to hold a 10-footer to make the playoff, which he did, and from there, wow, an amazing finish. But, you know, for Matsuyama, it was an overdue second tour victory. He had been very consistent without coming out on top. In 2015, he finished in the top five on a half dozen occasions, including a tie for second here that last year and a fifth place in the Masters. His only other
where
win.
Where did Hideki get his first win? Where did that come from? I forget. Where did he get a win at?
I was about to go there. You know, his only other win. I know. I had to say it because otherwise you would bring it up, so I better say it. His only other win.
I forget.
Had been via a playoff at the 2014 Memorial. That's in Ohio, I guess it is, somewhere around there.
Absolutely.
And he overcame Kevin Na in the first extra hole. But, you know, the best attended golf tournament in the world has become even better attended. Like you mentioned, the total attendance was of 618,365. It shattered the record of 564,368 last year. The new daily record also was set on Saturday when it reported 201,003 spectators, surpassing the daily record set last year when 189,722 attended on the third day. The crowd of 160,415 came on Friday, breaking the second round record of 123,674 set in 2014. Fred, to wrap up, Matsuyama said, and I quote, "It was a blast playing in front of all these people. I'd say probably 99% were cheering hard for Ricky, but that gave me the motivation to go out and do and win it." End of quote. You know, I think he missed his. It wasn't 99. It was 99.9% that was were rooting for Ricky. But anyway, as focused as Ricky looked in the playoff, Matsuyama also, to me, proved that he has the mental fortitude to go mano a mano with the very best in the world. And to me, he should be in the top five in the world, Fred.
Yeah, that was very convincing. He is a good player. I mean, he's been around now for about 3-4 years. And just keeps getting better and better. And he plays very good on very difficult golf courses. He's played well over here at Firestone, and he's played well in the Memorial, and he's played well in the majors. So, yeah, he's a guy to watch. But my question was, and I couldn't believe he was hitting driver on 17, the 71st hole, you know, and he hit a cut, and he still hit it through the green, over the back of the green into the water, which maybe was a little unlucky, but why was he hitting driver? Danny Lee and Hideki both hit hybrids, and they were within 20 yards of the green. Matter of fact, Lee putted. I think Hideki chipped, and they both got it close. But, you know, I don't know what he was thinking hitting driver there on the 71st hole. That really killed him. That lost him the tournament right there, two-shot swing. You know, Carlos, we're going to talk more about bringing children, young girls
Fred,
in particular. Yes.
Before you go on, I have the quotes from Ricky, what he said on those two shots, and I'm going to read them quickly for you here. Just to, you know, in regulation play, he explained that his tactics on the hole were, and I quote, "I'm hitting a chip cut driver. Usually, I don't expect it to hit on the downslope and then go 360 yards. So in the playoff, he pulled out his 3-wood instead, but then he yanked his drive into the lake just short of the green, and he said, I hit it solid, hit it a little high on the face, and it just got up and left a little quicker than I wanted." So those were his answers to those things that you were pointing at.
Yeah. There isn't much room down here. The water comes in. We've seen guys hit it in there before, you know. So, yeah. Well, as I mentioned, you know, we're going to be talking more about bringing children and young girls in particular to golf in tonight's show. Matter of fact, that is the theme of the show. Ricky Fowler demonstrated one of the reasons why golf is the best game for kids to learn. Just check the differences between how Fowler acted in his loss in front of the media versus Cam Newton's inexcusably bad attitude in his press conference after the Super Bowl loss. Maybe Cam would have been better off learning a couple of the first tee's 9 core values that would have helped him handle the crushing defeat a little better. I'm just going to leave it right there, Carlos, and move right on. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the LPGA. The big storyline for the week at the Coates LPGA Championship was wet and cold in Ocala, Florida. That made conditions very difficult. After 4 runner-up finishes last year, Hannah Zhang gets her first LPGA Tour win. Zhang had 8 wins on the Korean Tour and won that tour's money title in 2013. At the ripe old age of 23, she is looking for a big year this season on the LPGA Tour. If you remember, we talked about Zhang last week for her becoming the first ever player to score a hole-in-one on a par 4. Plus, we got to see Zhang last year here in Toledo at the Marathon Classic, where she collected one of her runners-up to Chela Choi, lost in a playoff, as a matter of fact. Canadian Brooke Henderson, who we followed all last year, was a factor and put herself in position with a third-round 67. It was only one of a handful of sub-70 rounds in very difficult conditions on Friday. Her final round, 72, left her 2 shots behind Zhang for runner-up. Carlos, you can just go ahead and put Brooke Henderson's name on the Rookie of the Year trophy right now. She's going to run away with that award at the end of the season. It's going to, you know, she's going to battle with Lexi and Lydia, Stacy and Emby for majors. You can mark it down. I said it right here today, February 9, 2016. Speaking of Lydia Ko, she played in her first event of the year after taking a couple of months off. Her rust was evident. She made a ton of mistakes, unlike her. She had managed to post 69, 69, 67 to have a share of the lead, but her final round, 75, left her three strokes behind Zhang for a T3 finish. Do you remember who used to finish top five when he didn't have his best? Tiger Woods. Even when Lydia is not firing on all cylinders, she managed to post a good score every day and finish high up on the leaderboards. You know, anything over 72 is really unusual for her, so 75 was very unusual. She kind of let one get away there, but again, I'm going to chalk that up to rust and being her first term of the year and with a couple months off in between there. So 2015 Rookie of the Year, Se-young Kim and In-Gee Shun tied with Ko for third. Lexi Thompson had another solid week and finished inside the top 10. Michelle Wee is trending up. Good to see her playing well in less than ideal conditions. There seemed to be nothing about Stacey Lewis's game that she was happy about, but did manage a T22 finish. A pair of 74s did her in last week. The LPGA now moves to Australia and Asia for the next three tournaments, Carlos.
No, that was amazing. And I have to second. I'm not going to get on your back on this one. Brooke Henderson, definitely. I second you on that one. She's going to be the rookie of the year. No questions asked. That's hers.
So, she may win a major this year, Carlos.
I wouldn't be surprised. The way she plays and the way her attitude, and she's so mature for just such a young age. Her and Lydia Ko are amazing, amazing. And we're just delighted to see her. But anyway, you know, there was also a tournament across the pond in the desert in Dubai, and that there, Englishman Danny Willett, he won the Omega Dubai Desert Classic by one shot after draining a 15-foot putt on the final hole. Willett had started the day with a one-shot lead, which he had extended to three shots with birdies on 12 and 13. However, he dropped a shot on 14th and a birdie on the last from Andy Sullivan, and birdies on 17 and 18 by Rafa Cabrera Bello. He meant he needed to make a sloping left-to-right putt for the title. The putt dropping meant that Willett finished on 19 under, and there was no three-way playoff. Instead, Sullivan and Cabrera Bello shared second place. You know, pre-tournament favorite also and defending champion Rory McIlroy's even round on Friday might have cost him. At one point, he was on the cut line, but from there on, he played the tournament better than anybody else. 13 under, including a 65 on Sunday, but that wasn't enough for the win. It was good enough for a tie for sixth place. It is Willett's fourth European Tour victory. This was a tournament where experience of winning seemed to matter. You know, when you look at it, every of the last seven pairings on Sunday's final round had won on the European Tour. For Andy Sullivan, oh my God, it extended his bittersweet experience there in Dubai. It is the second consecutive tournament in this emirate where he has finished runner-up after coming second to Rory McIlroy at the DP World Tour Championship in November. And for the second week running, again, we talk about Cabrera Bello, a winner here in 2012, finishing in a share of second place. Man, he's playing so good, and he's due for a win soon, I think. So close he's becoming. And finally, Fred, I got to ask you, should we be worried about fixing in golf? I mean, the announcer there, I welcome Rory McIlroy to the tee as, welcome Rory McIlroy, the 2019 Dubai Desert Classic champion. I mean, mind you, he could very well be right? But so maybe instead we just ask him for next week's lottery numbers, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know. This fixing in golf, there's too many guys trying to win. I just don't see it. I don't know. The Omega Desert Classic was really quite interesting. You had Ernie Els played good for a couple rounds there. Rory was erratic, and then when he turned it around, I mean, he was going to miss the cut, and he turned that thing around. And he went birdie, birdie, birdie to finish off that round on Friday, and he played really well over the weekend. So, you know, he might have knocked some rust off. He might be ready to go now. And then the putt that Danny Willett made on the 7th hole, that was really good. I was watching that, and that was a great, great putt. Hey, Carlos, let's talk a little bit about the Champions Tour. One of our good friends, Esteban Toledo, is a perfect 3-0 in playoffs on the Champions Tour and beat Billy Andrade on the third playoff hole for the win at the Allianz Championship last week in Boca Raton, Florida. Andrade Post, a final round of 67, was looking for his fourth Champions Tour victory over the last year, but a bogey at the 16th hole and a missed 5-foot birdie putt on the 18th hole left him tied with Toledo. Andrade proved once again that getting ahead of yourself happens even to the pros. He said in a post-round interview, "I just hit a very poor putt. I probably hit the worst putt I've hit in quite a while. I got a little quick. I was thinking about winning instead of thinking about making the putt." Things looked bleak for Andrade when his second shot landed in the palmetto bushes on the first playoff hole, but he managed to stay alive and save par. Both Andrade and Toledo parred the 18th hole the second time before Andrade missed the 17th green with a pitching wedge, and his birdie chip almost went in but rolled past the hole. For the 53-year-old Toledo, who never won on the PGA Tour, it was his fourth Champions Tour win and gets him off to a great start in 2016. Carlos, you got some news about the Web.com Tour they got rolling, I believe.
Oh, yes, they did, and in one of my favorite countries, and it was in Colombia, and there, Sebastián Muñoz, he won his hometown Club Colombia Championship on Sunday for his first Web.com Tour victory, two-putting for birdie from 45 feet on the par 5 18th for a one-stroke victory. He was playing on a sponsor's exemption, and he became the first Colombian winner in the history of the tour. He's a 23-year-old who played in North Texas, and he finished off a 5-under 66 in the morning in the completion of the suspended third round, and then he shot a 71 in the afternoon at the beautiful Bogota Country Club. He finished at 12-under 274. He earned $126,000. Now the Web.com Tour has a five-week break before the Chitimacha Louisiana Open on March 17th. And with that, we'll wrap up our weekend backspin. We're going to take our first short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. So nobody go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented to you by United Golf Network. And we're going to start, you know, when you go to the movies, you see some teasers about next coming movies. So now Fred is going to take the tee shot with a teaser of what we're going to be discussing on the practice range today. So, Fred, how about what you have for us on the tee shot today?
Yeah, Carlos, we're going to kind of continue along with our theme here of women in golf. Beth Brooke Marciniak had a great article in Fortune magazine about women being much more successful in business if they participate in sports at a young age. She cites a study from Michigan State University that says approximately 70% of children in the U.S. are dropping out of organized sports before the age of 13, which is particularly alarming for women because studies have shown also that girls who play sports are much more likely to graduate from college, find a job, and be employed in male-dominated industries. Another study shows that 94% of women who have attained success and reached the highest levels in the corporate world participated in sports, and more than 50% of that group played in college. This suggests a strong correlation between their success in sports and their success in business. In fact, of the 400 women surveyed, 75% said that a candidate's background in sports positively influenced their decision to hire them in the first place. These women put a particular premium on female athletes because they know athletic competition and practice impacts work ethic. So to have young women drop out of a sport at an early age is not only an alarming statistic, it is a wake-up call for parents. Girls could prematurely be walking away from something that could have a bigger long-term effect on their life. Carlos, I would like to also add to this that sports teach children to accept coaching and constructive criticism, as well as to work in a team atmosphere. The proliferation of technology and the lack of participation in sports in general for our younger generation stimulates individual thinking, but they will still need people who can put a team together and make ideas become a reality in the future. On another note, Diana Murphy has reached one of the most important positions in the golf world. As the president of the USGA, she becomes only the second woman to hold that title, and when Susie Whaley assumes the presidency of the PGA of America in a couple years, will be two of the big five important offices in golf will have or will be held by women in the near future here. The 59-year-old Murphy recently told Golf Digest, "I want to be the right person for the job, not the right girl. This is not about me. This is about the USGA and doing what is best for the game of golf." On another note of interest, Murphy is not only the second woman to become the president of the USGA, she is also the second person in her house. Her husband, Reg Murphy, was the USGA president who immediately preceded Bell, serving in 1994 to 1995. Women seeing other women ascending to the most important jobs in golf and the young ladies of the LPGA succeeding on television screens around the world are just two of the factors that can increase the interest in golf among young women, Carlos.
I won't comment. We'll get to that. This is an interesting topic, and we'll get it on the practice range. So I'll leave it there. That was our teaser for the practice range. So, hey, Fred. You know, popularity is a science of diminishing returns. You know, ask, for example, 20 people in your office their thoughts on a given coworker, and it's inevitable that someone will have something negative to say, no matter how popular said coworker may be. Okay? Now, Neo European Tour chief Keith Pelley, however, appears to be that mathematical exception to that rule. At least, if an official poll of players, coaches, caddies, and managers 2 weeks ago during the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship is any indication of it. Pelley continues to do business differently than his American counterpart, Tim Finchem, something that Rex Hoggard highlights in his Golf Channel profile. Hoggard says that Pelley differs from Tim Finchem, and I quote, who at times throughout his career has appeared to be more concerned with protecting the PGA Tour brand than the individuals who play under that shield, end of quote. But it's the desire to share European Tour fines and penalties that contrasts sharply with Commissioner Finchem's tireless efforts to not let anyone know who got bad slow play times or worse. To suggest he would be against penalty shots for those violating the PGA Tour rules, you know, Hoggard writes that Pelley has also broken with the PGA Tour when it comes to player fines, which in the U.S. are strictly confidential, with the exception of violations of the circuit's policy regarding performance-enhancing drugs. Pelley said, and I quote, "We have nothing to hide. It is not only a penalty from a monetary perspective you want to see. You won't want to see. And your peers won't want to see someone be fined. Nobody likes to be highlighted for slow play, and I think this is a deterrent for that," end of quote. Now, despite the differences and divergent paths that each tour is taking, it's probably not an all-out turf war that concerns PGA Tour officials. I mean, the circuit is far too entrenched for that, as much as it is the emerging perception that Pelley and company are becoming the game's trendsetters. You know, that arrogance then might be because they know there's a cash gap between the tours, and closing that gap really depends largely on Pelley's ability to convince the sponsors his product is comparable to that in the United States on a more regular basis. I don't know yet, but you see, Pelley's very accessible. He listens to the players, and he's a media guy. He knows what the media wants, which translates to more exposure and, in return, better sponsors. Fred, he's making noise, and the old saying goes, when the river sounds, water carries. So beware, it might not be this year, it might not be the next, but so far so good for Mr. Pelley, and I think you know, they can close that gap if this continues to happen.
Yeah, he keeps shaking things up. He keeps making the headlines. He's not much like not like O'Grady or those guys. They were pretty tight-lipped, but this guy's kind of shaking it up a little bit. Hey, Carlos, one of the stories we've been following for some time are the trials of the membership of fabled Wentworth Club in London, since it was purchased by a wealthy Chinese businessman who wants to turn it into an exclusive high-end club. The cost of memberships are increasing to £100,000, and annual dues are doubling to £16,000. As you can imagine, it has raised the ire of current members. The BMW PGA Championship, which is one of the largest and most prestigious events on the European Tour, has been brought into the fray. As you know, it is annually played on Wentworth. It is in danger of being disrupted or could even have be forced to move to another location for its May date. The European Tour admits that it is somewhat concerned by the prospect of one of its most famous tournaments being affected by the ongoing dispute. Lawyers for the aggrieved, we got lawyers involved, so you know it's serious. Lawyers for the aggrieved former members have made contact with the Chinese conglomerate, threatening legal action. Unless Ryanwood backtracks in the forthcoming weeks, the residents, many of whom are members, indicate they will withdraw their support for the £3.8 million tournament. In a 15-page letter, they point out that not only do restrictive covenants in the deeds give them the right to object to grandstands, advertising, and the staging of a rock concert on the Saturday night, but that the organizers require the permission of the Wentworth Estate Roads Committee to close certain sections of Wentworth Drive during the tournament. The letter adds, if the residents are effectively excluded from the club, the Road Commission may refuse permission to close the streets in 2016 to protect the residents from the disruption the tournament causes. While the club owners insist they are within their legal rights and will press on with proposals, there is obviously consternation within the tour, which has its headquarters at Wentworth. That adds another problem to it. What about the sponsors? They're going to want to avoid any embarrassment and not be a party to a rebellion and a revolt. Without the road closures, the staging of an event that attracts daily crowds of up to 25,000 could turn into a logistical nightmare. Already the club captain is expressing doubts that the 61-year-old event can proceed as normal. I don't think the PGA can go ahead at this moment with such an environment, such a situation, Michael Fleming told the Financial Times. In a statement, the tour said, it would be extremely unfortunate if the current dispute between Ryanwood and the Wentworth Residents Association had any negative effect on the BMW PGA Championship, which, aside from showcasing Wentworth to golf fans around the world, has also raised hundreds of thousands of pounds for local charities over many years. Carlos, this situation just keeps getting more interesting by the week. Stay tuned. I'm sure we haven't heard the last of this. We'll keep reporting on this as new events keep happening.
It's really unfortunate, and like you mentioned, we are all over it, so we'll keep bringing you everything as it happens. So hopefully everything will work out for them and for this famous club. Anyway, I don't have good news here about Jim Furyk, who has yet to make a start of the PGA Tour this season. He needs surgery on his left wrist and will be out of action until May, that according to Golf Week. Furyk said, and I quote, "While I am disappointed that the wrist has not yet healed sufficiently for me to return to play, I am confident that the surgery at this point is the best course of action and will get me back in the shortest possible time. This has been frustrating for me to this point, but I am focusing on an aggressive rehabilitation program and having a strong year once I am sufficiently healed," end of quote. You know, that wrist injury was the same one that has been bothering Furyk, now 45 years old, for a while now. As you might remember, it kept him out of the Tour Championship back in September and also the President's Cup in October. He's a 17-time PGA Tour winner who was initially targeting a return at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am this week, but said in January that he was surprised his wrist hadn't healed yet. Fred Furyk is ninth right now in the official World Golf Rankings, one spot behind Dustin Johnson, who is currently holding the fourth and final Olympics spot for U.S. Furyk was named co-captain for this year's Ryder Cup, but he has said all along that he expects to make the team as a player, so he better have a great, great year when he comes back in May.
Yeah, you got to hope. You got to hope he does. You know, he's still got a couple years left on the regular tour. He's been playing. He keeps playing at a very high level. So hope it works out for him. But, man, when you go messing with wrists and stuff like that, that's very scary. With how much torque and pressure they put on those things when they hit that ground or go down through the ball, it's amazing. Carlos, golf is going extreme. We reported last year the launch of Scratch TV in partnership with the PGA Tour to draw in a younger, more technology-savvy audience. That means millennials, not old guys like you and me, Carlos. Well, the Tour and Scratch TV, in conjunction with GoPro, aired their first efforts at the Waste Management Phoenix Open last week, and the results are a little mixed. The usage of GoPro cameras, for example, may not hold the same excitement that shushing down a mountain covered in snow on a pair of boards may hold, or tackling a 20-foot wave on a surfboard. What, you don't think the vision of a caddy raking a bunker just isn't that exciting? They did have some exciting sand splashes of golfers trying to extricate themselves from bunkers. I don't know. GoPros can help show the golf tournament maybe from a fan's perspective. You know, they can also show the line at the restroom or the food counter, for example. Scratch that. I mean, how a golf fan is viewing a golf tournament from outside the ropes, plus impromptu interviews with fans or other people around the golf course, could be interesting. There had to be some very interesting sights and sounds inside the luxury suites and around the stands that surround the 16th green last week. This first effort was a live video produced at the outdoor tailgate party, that is the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale. GoPro, Scratch, and the Tour are still exploring ways to bring various aspects of golf that may appeal to millennials. And what is more appealing than a huge party on a golf course involving 20,000 spectators on one hole? Various announcers were involved on the ground and in the booth at number 16. It gave viewers a little different perspective on the rowdiest hole in golf. The show was downstream live on the Internet and can be viewed on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, type in PGA Tour Live in the search area. If you're interested in seeing for yourself, just go check it out. And Carlos, that ends the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network for February the 9th, 2016. United Golf Network has everything a golfer needs to enjoy the game more. Top line of products, Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs. They not only have an excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to own their own golf shop through their director's program. Discounts and commissions. Buy products you want, get it cheaper, get a commission to do it. Set your friends up. United Golf Network also provides instant free access to Global Affinity. Get discounted travel. MyGolf in U.S., great discounts on travel to 16 states, 3 Canadian provinces. So go to UnitedGolfNetwork.com, check out their products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our first of the two VIGs of the week, Brian Hepler, founder of the Tata Golf, and Brian Basil, Senior Director, Product Head Creation of TaylorMade and Adidas Golf. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our very important guest of the week, the VIG of the week section. And we have not one, we have two for you. And the first one is Brian Hepler, who is the founder of the Theta Golf training system that involves body movement and mind control to learn golf faster and easier. Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview.
Yeah, Carlos, I've been curious about learning about the Tathada golf training system for some time. And I had the chance to meet and talk with the founder, Brian Hepler, at the PGA show. And, of course, I jumped at the chance. Hepler has studied golf and golf movement for over 30 years. And in his training system, it combines, as you said, martial arts and drills to train the mind as well as the body to better learn the golf swing. He was very interesting to talk with. Our conversation continued much longer than this interview, and then I even saw him down the floor. We even talked some more down there. So, Carlos, go ahead and play the interview, if you would.
We are talking today with Brian Hepler. We're at the PGA Golf Show in Orlando, Florida. Brian is the developer of the Tathada Golf Training System. We are just tickled to death to be able to talk to him today. And Brian, how did you get started in golf, and where did all this come from?
I started in the game of golf back when I was 13 years old. My dad introduced me to the game, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I grew up playing multiple different sports, but golf was interesting to me because it seemed difficult and hard at the time. So that started my passion of learning and growing and trying to master, in a sense, the game of golf.
You are first and foremost a teacher, and in Tathada Golf, you've come up with more of an idea that it's a mind, body, and a swing. It's just not, it's the movement. It's not maybe a position. You've learned under some different people, but you've kind of come up with this concept on your own.
I've looked at over the last 30 years, some of the greatest golf instruction, been able to train with them, all from the insight of a player. Everything that I was able to be a part of or embody came from my passion for my own game, in a sense, to play. And so I was looked at not only golf instruction, but also when I first stepped into a dojo, I could see that golf instruction being taught in a unique way through martial arts. The first time I saw a Boken move, how a child would revere a pathway of learning. And that was the first time I started to put together, wait a minute, there's a simpler way. We could take some of the mechanics and the positions and the science out of it and teach children or adults at whatever level how they could truly move. I've also feel grateful that I've been able to train with some of the most learned people in sports psychology as well as some of the most unique martial art mental training. That is the backbone or the essence of Tathata training, so that we truly are trained, so that we truly can stand with strength or aim from our dantian, meaning before we think.
Yeah, and as golfers, as all golfers know, you have to be confident in your movement, in what's going to happen. If those negative thoughts come in, that's when things happen. So Tathata gives you the confidence in your movement. And even using other training methods like martial arts or other type situations, that you just become more confident and more aware of your movement.
Right. And that's why the industry seems to be so passionate about the program, the training, and the thousands of people around the world that are embodying the principles, is because they're actually learning. And it isn't about Brian Hepler and his teaching as much as they're absolutely moving through a pathway or a curriculum or a learning that they can validate their own truth, their own greatness, and train alongside in some strategic days of the training the greatest athletes and players in the history of the game. So it's almost as if you get to learn that your movements, although simple, although validated as truth, but you also get to visually look at, wait a minute, this is how the greats have always moved. And I think in that way, you can assimilate a pathway or a curriculum, and you really can step back and look at it as truth. And I think once we have the freedom to go, what if, or this is how the greats have always moved, then we open up to moving past always doubting or searching and absolutely learning.
We can find you at www.tathata, which is T-A-T-H-A-T-A, golf.com. On there, you have some various training programs. You have a 60-day training program, which kind of helps speed up learning experience. Some of your feedback on there, I see that some of your people, trainees, have said they've learned the game much quicker using your principles and your procedure. You also do a 2.5-day training experience back in Scottsdale.
That's right. We've got an in-home 60-day training program, or 60 sessions that build on themselves. And then once you graduate from that program, then you can come to the home campus or train in person inside what we call the live 2.5-day experience.
Well, we would encourage our listeners to click on to Tathata Golf, TathataGolf.com. Check out Brian Hepler's kind of revolutionary training program. It involves the mind, body, as well as the golf swing, not necessarily maybe getting the club in a certain position, but being able to feel the body move through the swing and have that sense of motion. That is, it is key and the essence of all great golf swings from Hogan on up to today. So, Brian, thanks again for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
There you have it. That was Brian Hepler, founder of Tathata Golf. And Fred, interesting interview and an interesting product, really. Anything that can help golfers to get back to basics is really a great thing.
Yeah, we'll give a little tease here. Next week we're planning a large session talking about modern teaching techniques using social media and some of the different things that are being used, technology, and we're going to have a teaching pro, one of the leading teaching pros, in to talk with us about that. But Brian Hepler's Tathata Golf Training System really involves body movement and mind control to learn to golf faster and easier. And Gary McCord and Brian Chambly both back this product to talk about it, and they're doing it because they believe in the product. They're not taking a nickel for promoting this product, and when you see them on TV, they're doing it just because they believe in what Brian Hepler's talking about. So it's a pretty good concept. You know, I may try and find out more from him, and we might look into this a little bit deeper down the road sometime.
There you have it. You have the teaser as well for next week's main topic. So, hey, let's go to our second VIP. His name is Brian Basil. He's the Senior Director of Product Creation at TaylorMade Adidas Golf and one of the head engineers that is responsible for the new M2 and M1 woods and fairway woods. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this one.
Yeah, I went over to the TaylorMade booth and was introduced to Brian, and he was kind enough to sit down and talk with me a little bit. He's been involved for several years in the development of the M1 and the M2 woods. So he was very interesting to talk to, gave us a lot of good information. So go ahead and play that.
We are talking with Brian Basil here at the TaylorMade booth on the floor of the PGA Show in Orlando, Florida. And Brian is with TaylorMade and is experienced with their M1 and M2 products that just rolled out this year. And thank you so much, Brian, for taking a minute to talk to us.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I really appreciate it. There's a lot of energy and buzz around the new M line of products.
Yeah, standing here in your booth, you have a really good traffic. You've got a lot of reps talking to people. I see the pros are sitting over in the purchasing area. It looks like a lot of products moving today.
Yeah, honestly, it couldn't be better for us. I mean, from the demo day yesterday when everybody had an opportunity to actually hit it and experience the product, I mean, we could talk about it all day long and love to talk about it on the show right here. But, you know, you just have to get it in your hands, and when you do, it's an experience that I think a lot of golfers are gravitating towards.
So kind of the first time we saw this product, Jason Day was knocking it all over the yard at Whistling Straits. You know, won by a pretty good margin up there, had some pretty good success. We've seen several players jump over to the M1.
and now the M2 line is rolled out. So what's making it so unique and perform so well?
Well, yeah, I mean, to reiterate what Jason Day did, you know, in Conway Farms, where he totally lit up the field that first week he put it in play, you couldn't script that for us any better. But what these guys are experiencing and what we put in the product is allow them to get a little bit more ball speed and to personalize that product to a degree that I think most golfers didn't expect with the, you know, the T-track system in the bottom. You can shift weights around. You can really, no matter what kind of flight you're looking for, or, you know, any kind of flaw in your swing that you want to adjust for, the product almost does that for you. But on top of that, you know, it's just a magnificent look. You know, you can see that carbon composite from the top, and it just tells a story in of itself, and people fall in love with it even before they hit it. And that's what happened with Jason as well.
How long had that product been in development before you really rolled it out to the public?
Well, you know, it's a combination of a lot of technologies, and as it relates to the composite, which is a 7-layer proprietary carbon composite, it's been over a decade that we've been really fine-tuning and working on that. And so, you know, if you think about it that way, it's been several years, but, you know, the titanium casting has gotten better, you know, our track systems that we've learned from, you know, we briefed this in, you know, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, but, you know, when it comes to all the technology and innovation, it's been several years in the making.
From the numbers you've seen so far with this product rolling out, I'm just curious about how the retail, how the average golfer is jumping on with this product.
Yeah, well, just about, let's see, in the month of, I think it was November, we had about $1 in every $4 spent was on M1. So if that's any indication of what the golfers are saying about the product, I would say we're in a good spot. And right now, I think from the momentum we're feeling here at the PGA Show with the release of M2, which is complementary to M1, and I'd love to walk through that, I think it's just going to get better and better.
Well, tell us a little bit about the M2 while you're here. That's the 3, 4, 5 woods. Do the hybrids come into that, or is it just basically the metal woods?
So there's a driver, there's fairway woods, and there's hybrids, or rescues, and what we call them. And it really is based in the same technology and innovation that M1 was born from, which is multi-material. You see that exact same kind of carbon composite top. The shape is somewhat similar to the M1, especially in the driver. And then we utilize that weight in the bottom of the club for one purpose, and that is to maximize forgiveness or protection of ball speed on miss hits. So where M1, you can personalize it with all these moving weights, and M2, it's set up just to maximize forgiveness. So for that golfer who says, hey, I hit it all over the face and I just need all the help I can get, but I want that hot trajectory that TaylorMade's known for, M2 is going to be the right club for you.
So the M1 is maybe for a little bit more of the lower handicap, where the M2 is a little bit more of the average golfer. Is that fair to say?
Actually, I wouldn't even put it that way. I think it's unfair because M1 is so adjustable and so personalizable, but it has a forgiveness setting. You can put the weight all the way back in that product. It has everything. Honestly, it's the best driver we've ever created. Now, M2 is for those guys, like I said, that maybe it does slightly go to the average player in terms of more players who hit it all over the face, but this is going to be played on tour for sure. Daniel Berger this week coming up at Torrey Pines said, I love that M2. I'm going to put that one in play. John Senden, the same thing. So anyway, these drivers are deliver such great performance that it does span a bigger audience than I think one would just say on the top level, but most golfers would love forgiveness, no doubt about it. So M2 is going to deliver that.
Hit it farther, hit it higher, and hit it straighter. That's the key.
That's what I work on every day, and that will not go away. Golfers love distance, first and foremost. But when you can deliver both, distance and forgiveness, then it's a home run.
Well, Brian, thanks again for talking to us here on Back Nine Report today. We hope you have a great show here in Orlando this week, and we will definitely be one to try the new M1 and M2 product.
No, I appreciate it. It's a crazy week here. Just to be able to sit down is a nice thing. So I appreciate you sitting down with me and having this good talk.
There you have it. That was Brian Bassel. He's the Senior Director of Product there for TaylorMade and Adidas Golf. Fred, one thing that he didn't mention to me there is the You know, performance-wise, the TaylorMade, the Aero Burner, the fairway was, to me, hard to beat. It was lacking a little in the looks, the sound, and the feel. I heard that before. But with this M2 fairway, TaylorMade apparently has fixed this by combining, you know, what it's the best of bits from both the Aero Burner and the best of the M1 fairway. So I believe it's a little better maybe for the average golfer, like he was mentioning there. And I've seen that maybe the biggest difference that it could be said, you know, other than the look, it might be the sole that they both have, because the M1 had the two sliding weights, like you mentioned, but the M2 have replaced them with the white-looking speed pocket that the Aero Burner has, but it's just in black. So it's definitely one to worth to try.
Yeah, and they put the weight on the bottom, all on the bottom, so that gives you a little bit more lift for the golfer that has a little bit slower swing speed. I have to admit, I have not tried the M1 or the M2 as of yet. They had them all there at the show. Matter of fact, you can probably hear in the background a little bit some clubs hitting balls. We were sitting right by the driving range there where you could try any club. All the manufacturers, all the club makers were all lined up there indoors, and you can just go down the line and hit anything you want that's out there. But I didn't really have time. I didn't take the time to go hit some. But I will do that in the near future. My last couple three drivers have been TaylorMade's, and I'm still hitting the rocket balls, and I'm probably due for a new driver. So I'm thinking maybe an M2 might be in my foreseeable future, actually. So, good interview with Brian, Carlos.
Yep. And that wraps up our VIG, very important guest of the week, thanks to Brian Hepler and to Brian Bassel. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have the topic of the week on the practice range, how to attract young women to golf. So don't go away. We're going to take a very short break.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us take a shot at it. That's why we call it the practice range. And this week, the topic is, how does golf attract more young women to play golf? This is a very interesting subject, you know, the state of golf and all that. And Fred, tell us a little bit about what's your take on this one.
Well, you know, Carlos, it's like everything else. It's, you know, one thing is not going to do it. It has to be kind of a multi-pronged attack. No one piece is going to have the desired effect all on its own, but a combined effort in all of these areas, I think, will bring a larger number of young women to the game. Number one, you've got, you know, I talked earlier about women in the corporate boardroom. You've got Diana Murphy, who is now the president of the USGA, and Susie Whaley, who will be the president of the PGA of America, two of the largest bodies in golf, reaching the highest office. So that's going to inspire more women in general to take up golf and become more active. They should also, hopefully, then bring their daughters to the game. When you see mom out there competing and smacking a golf ball around, maybe having a good time, their children should want to become involved also. One of the things that I think is really making a big push right now in the United States, from people that I've talked to around the country, there's a ton of pros around that are actually bringing golf into the physical education programs in the elementary schools and the high schools. The First Tee here in Toledo has made an effort to reach every school and has corporate support to provide the equipment necessary to bring their 9 core values to and golf to elementary and high school. our friends Mark Croft and Ty Anderson, both PGA teaching professionals, teach classes in schools to introduce golf to kids. Certainly, their work will inspire a few of these young children or in young girls to pursue golf even farther. The PGA Tour team initiative that Susie Whaley heads up with the PGA of America, that is, in some areas, that is really big. I know in Florida, down the warmer weather, that's a big program down there. And then you've got the role of the LPGA Tour and the young women that are succeeding. I really think that a younger girl, a young lady, a young woman, when they see the age of these young ladies that are succeeding on the LPGA Tour, you know, they're not that far removed. They can see that. I mean, even if a girl is 9, 10, 11 years old, you're seeing Lydia Ko succeeding at the age of 16, 17, 18 years old. Lexi Thompson, same thing. So, you know, just as we have seen Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods bring whole generations to the game of golf, the LPGA Tour is making golf enticing for young women. So Brooke Henderson, Lexi Thompson, the rest of the young ladies on the LPGA, as they succeed, they still are able to retain their femininity. They should appeal to a broader sector of young women and hopefully get them out there swinging a golf club. Then you've got this whole phenomenon of this Top Golf thing. I keep watching it, very curious about this. They're going to be building one over here in Indianapolis. I think there's one in Chicago. So I've not been to one yet. I'm really anxious to get to one to check it out. I follow a lot of David Ogren's posts on Facebook, who works for Top Golf down in San Antonio. You know, how many women or young girls get introduced to golf at one of these Top Golf facilities? Now, I know this is just kind of a funsy little thing, but still, it's golf. And they're springing up all over the country. It's fun. And so they go there, they find out it's fun, they want to do it some more. I really think Top Golf can have a huge effect on women and others who would never have even considered golf in the past. Then you've got guys like Mark Croft and David Rollins, who have started the Mommy Golf Initiative on Facebook and social media. It's finding some traction. They're bringing the idea of more mothers getting their children on the golf course. You know, right now, that's a little thing, but it's growing daily. And in the end, Carlos, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this one, it's up to the parents. Fathers and mothers must show their children, young girls especially, the value of golf. How many women have we had on the show, and when we asked them how they got started in golf, said their father took them to the course, and they wanted to spend more time with their father, so they took up golf. The professionals also at local golf clubs must make the game fun and interesting for young girls. They have to be creative and develop programs and contests that keep these young girls interested in the sport and making the game interesting and fun. Golf encompasses so many things, Carlos. We know the value it has on developing a better individual for life going forward, in addition to the exercise and just the fact of being outside and playing a game, the comradeship, the friendship you can develop with the people you're playing with, the people that you meet. It's just a great game all around. I know that, you know, when you're younger sometimes it's, you see it as slow and that kind of thing, but, you know, it has a lot of value, Carlos, and I really see how some of these things can help drive people, young women especially, to the game.
Ah, man, yeah, it's funny.
And you're going to tell me I'm full of baloney.
No,
you sound just like my wife.
Well, maybe Pat is right in something. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, I hate to go the other way on this one. I have to agree that it's up to the parents. You know, that's the key. If they don't show their kids about it, but like you mentioned, there has to be a multi-pronged attack. But the thing is that I don't see the game of golf, even though with the things that, you know, it's thriving in parts of Asia, golf is struggling in America and much of Europe right now. And it's trying to reinvent itself, definitely for a generation that is right now brought up on the quick hits of video games. That's the truth. I mean, we all remember when Tiger burst onto the scene winning the 97 Masters, and you know, it drew 4 million more viewers than the ones that watched Jordan Spieth win this past April the Masters, even though Spieth's ratings were up 36% from a year earlier, that according to Nielsen, right? But no matter how popular Spieth might become, the real measure of the sport's popularity and the financial health isn't how many people are watching it. It's going to be how many people are playing it. And that's where the problem, I think, it lies. It's not attracting more players. And that, by measure of things, is well behind right now those numbers and the pre-recession highs. I mean, golf resorts, for an example, they have a generation Y problem. You know, young adults do not flock to the fairway the way that baby boomers did. And young business travelers right now are disinclined to commit 4 or 5 hours to a single game. Take, for example, this numbers. From 1996 to last year, the average age of a hotel guest rose by roughly just a year to 46. During the same period, the average of a hotel guest who play golf went up by 2.5 years, roughly to 49. That's according to BK Shiflett and Associates. So they are a tourism and travel research company. If you consider that to the 2014, only 22% of travelers under 33 played golf when they stayed at a resort, compared with 42% of the baby boomers. Resorts are pondering that question, and also golf courses. They're making changes, we can see it, that would have been unthinkable even a decade ago. They're adding speakers to the golf carts, Wi-Fi access on the course, building high-tech training centers and miniature golf putting courses, and peppering corporate golf events with tangentiality-related activities like using golf clubs to hit marshmallows or throwing frisbees around the course, things that would entice millennials to be more comfortable in the course. But, you know, the scariest thing is to me that, according to the National Golf Foundation's most recent participation report, the number of golfers aged 6 to 17 dropped 24%. But then you see incredible and lovable, I mean, I love the first tee, their numbers that national program, like you mentioned, their aim at introducing young players to the sport, it has been exploding. And those numbers just doesn't being reconciled. I mean, for once, you see the first tee exploding, but then you see that the golf participation is not getting into it. I don't know. To me, I see it like it has to be done something in golf. I mean, if there's nothing scarier, you want the scary an 8-year-old and make him cry? Well, tee up a ball for him in a 450 hole with a green surrounded by bunkers and tell him, hey, hold out before the group waiting for the tee off starts. You know? I see it as a problem. The millennials just don't have that same, growing environment that we did. And there has to be something really to be changed. I see the progress. I would like for it to be more, but for some reason, I just don't see it happening. Hopefully, I'm wrong. I wish that more parents get into the game, and hopefully this change, like you mentioned, Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, Lexi Thompson, and maybe on the guys, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy could get this going, but I just don't see it happening right now.
You know, Carl, you mentioned a point there about a young person, you know, teeing up on a par 5, 450 yards long. That should never happen. And I've talked to many golf course managers and owners about this. You know, get tees up there, you know, at the 150-yard mark and have juniors tee off there. Let them play a course that they can succeed at. You know, have a short course. And another thing that I'm seeing, Carlos, is I'm seeing a lot more specialty golf courses being built. I know of, I think, 3 or 4 right now that are being built that are more like they're going to be like four or five holes, and they will have multiple tee placements. But, you know, the longest hole might be 200 yards. So it's going to be more for a training facility for juniors and for women and you can play a quick round that way. You can still play a little bit of golf, and you don't have to beat yourself up. You can go walk it, have a good exercise. But this is exactly what we need for kids and for juniors and for women that we're trying to bring into the game. So there's a lot of that stuff going on, Carlos. Like we say, I think we can agree that one thing's not going to do it. It's going to take a unified effort of a lot of different things. And the game's too good. We need to bring more people into it, and especially women.
I agree on that, and this is a call out for everybody out there. We need to do more. We need to do more. Get the word out. Golf is too good a sport to pass by the youngsters. I mean, like you mentioned, I couldn't agree more with the example that you brought up with Ricky Fowler and Cam Newton. I mean, I just don't want to go there with Cam Newton because I don't have time right now. But it's just so unbelievable, that childish behavior. But those things, you see Ricky Fowler on the other side, and nobody could deny it. His class and all that. He had his grandparents flown to that tournament that has never seen him win a tournament, only on TV. And he was like, you know, this was a tough one to swallow because he brought all these people that have never seen him win to see him win, and then he loses it. And it really hits him. And he could have had all the excuses to go over Serge Kylo Ren, like you would say, like Cam Newton did. But no, he didn't. And those things are taught through the game of golf, and we have to go out there and as parents teach our children on it, those values that the first tee promotes. It's incredible. We have to do more. I have to agree with that. Fred, anything else before we move on to our final putts?
Let's do it.
Well, to finalize here, we have our final putts, and I'm going to start talking about the Honda Classic. The field is shaping out to be a very competitive one. Officials announced that fan favorites Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia, yes, and Adam Scott will play in this year's Honda Classic. That's February 22 to the 28th at PGA National Resort in Spine Palm Beach Gardens. Garcia is currently ranked 13th in the world rankings, Adam Scott the 15th, and Mickelson is 32nd, but he overhauled his swing during the offseason under the guidance of new coach Andrew Gaston, and we have seen the resurgence in his game already. Mickelson, Garcia, and Scott join a field that already includes world number 2, Rory McIlroy, who won in 2012, number 9, Patrick Reed, and number 11, Brendan Grace, who's playing great, and Kevin Kisner, the leader in the FedEx Cup, number 17, Brooks Koepka, and number 19, Hideki Matsuyama, who just won at Phoenix. Also another news piece here. As per a report from the Bonnesser Times, a street in Bonnesser, which is a town and locality in the Scenic Rim region in Queensland, Australia, will be named the Jason Day Drive in honor of the champion golfer who spent his early years in the town about 60 kilometers south of Brisbane. The Scenic Rim Regional Council announced it had approved the naming of the new street on Oakland Estate after the former world number one. He grew up in Bonnesser and learned his craft as a six-year-old after his father infamously retrieved the golf club from a local tip and handed it to his son. But, hey, congratulations to Jason. He very well deserved. And finally, Fred, on the eve of the tournament in Dubai, on a side note, Lee Westwood told ESPN.com that he attributes his recent poor form to his divorce from wife Lorraine. He said, and I quote, "I have found it nearly impossible to concentrate on golf, so I understand what happened in terms of my results last year," end of quote.
There's always a woman involved, Carlos. Always,
yeah,
a woman
always
involved.
For good or for bad, there's always a woman involved. Westwood, who is now 42, he did manage to stay in the top 50 at the end of the year, which guaranteed him entry on this year's Masters and Open Championship, but he had slipped 52nd entering last week. And all we can do is wish him the best, Fred. Hopefully he can find himself through all this and get back to be a great competitor who we all know he can be. So I can just wish him the best, Fred.
Carlos, you know we can't get through the show without a Donald Trump mention. Dear Donald,
oh,
says,
yeah, he won.
Well, there you go. He says the PGA Tour will not pull out of the WGC at Doral.
No.
Says it really doesn't matter to him if they do, but he'll make more money without them. He says, but he doesn't see them ending the longest continuing running tour on site. He said, they do not want to do that. There's no site like Doral in Florida. I have the greatest site in all of Florida. But if Cadillac pulls their sponsorship and no one picks it up, he may lose his tournament. You know, we had Bubba being Bubba at Phoenix. Evidently, he didn't like the changes that were made by Tom Weisskopf. Said so in a few words. I don't like it. I'm not going to PC it. I don't like it at all. I just mentioned why I'm here. I've got three beautiful sponsors that love it here. Ping, Stance Sox, and Oakley are all sponsors. Watson said he was unhappy with the changes made to toughen up the course by Tom Weisskopf. Several fairway bunkers were moved to challenge even the longest hitters like Watson and Phil Mickelson. They went from a driver and a wedge to maybe a driver and a 4-5. Oh, poor babies. They had to get a 5-iron. Oh, my goodness. Bubba knocked the course even though he'd finished runner-up in the two previous seasons up to this year. I'm not going to talk any more about it. That's enough of those crybabies. Gary Player, more than 35 years after he designed the course in which it is played, Gary Player will be the official host of the Nedbank Golf Challenge. Dubbed Africa's Major and hosted by golfing legend, the Nedbank Golf Challenge will be played from November 10th through the 13th at the Gary Player Country Club in Sun City in South Africa's Northwest Province. Player said, I'm honored to be so closely associated with such an important tournament in my homeland. I'm proud that the Gary Player Country Club continues to provide the challenge for some of the world's best players to show off their talents. And I'm especially pleased that it will happen in South Africa. Carlos, I got a really great story here. Old guys rule. You got to love this story.
Yes. Yes.
84-year-old Joe McCourt and 84 and 79, Don Sawyer made back-to-back aces in front of a third witness. They were playing the 135-yard fifth hole at Illinois' Manteno Golf Club, which lies south of Chicago. The one gentleman said, Joe hit first and it looked like it went screaming over the green, but we couldn't see it too good. Don hit next, and it looked like he went past the green, too. Then I shot, and I was feeling pretty good. My shot landed about 10 feet from the cup. McCourt and Sawyer were in the same cart, and they headed straight for the area behind the green, looking for what they assumed were less-than-ideal tee shots. McCourt had used a 7-wood, but didn't get much loft. Sawyer used a 3-iron. I can't imagine it went too high either. I couldn't find anything back there, so I was walking back towards the hole and looked in. McCourt said, I saw two balls in there. The logos on the balls were facing straight up. I knew they were ours, but I didn't take them out. I wanted the other guys to see them. So that's that, Carlos. I love that story. I love that story. I love the quote from the guy. Also want to mention before we close up shop here tonight that the February issue of NW Golf Links will be out in the morning. So go to nwo.back9mediagroup.com to get the February issue. We've got Treetops Resort and the Toledo Golf Show on the cover this month, Carlos.
So those who are subscribed, look for it in your emails. And if you're not subscribed, shame on you. Go ahead and subscribe already. Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us. Special thanks to our VIGs, very important guests of the week, Brian Hepler, founder of Tatata Golf, and Brian Bassel, the Senior Director of Product Creation at TaylorMade Adidas Golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.